From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.
Fishing fleets often catch more than just the species they target. As KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, Alaskans who depend on salmon to feed their families are asking federal fisheries managers to clamp down on the bycatch of their primary food source.
Fisheries managers allow whitefish trawlers to inadvertently scoop up halibut, crab, and salmon in their nets. The bycatch rate is relatively low, but because the trawlers catch so much of their target species, the unintended harvest adds up. In rural western Alaska, where chum and king salmon runs have been performing poorly, the bycatch is raising alarms. While the bycaught salmon is often donated to food banks, it's of little assurance to those living along the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers, where subsistence is a way of life.
We eat dry fish like people from the Midwest eat bread with every meal.
Mary Peltola is executive director of the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. She lives in the largely Yupik community of Bethel.
Our babies teethe on dry fish. It's the first food most Yupiks eat, and it's something that we crave year-round.
Peltola told the North Pacific Fishery Management Council this month that fishing on the Kuskokwim has been severely restricted to protect wild salmon stocks. Meanwhile, trawlers haven't faced any new restrictions on their own as they scoop up lucrative whitefish like pollock, cod, and halibut. She's asked the council to work to put an end to bycatch in the industrial commercial trawl fleet.
We're not policy experts. We're not scientists. We're not career people. This isn't part of our career ladder. We're very desperate to pass on the knowledge that we've received over 12,000 years on how to live in harmony with salmon and utilize salmon as our foundational diet.
The At Sea Processors Association, a large industrial trawl organization, said in an emailed statement that no fishery is without bycatch and that there are always other species in the nets or caught on the line. A moratorium on salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea would mean a total shutdown of the pollock fishery, they argue. North Pacific Fishery Management Council member Andy Mesereau says he's heard the call for zero bycatch before. Why not request less bycatch?
I can see how it would be galling to have no Chinook salmon returning to your river and have thousands of them being caught in the ocean out in front of the river. So I understand your frustration. But what I don't understand is what the strategy of asking for zero bycatch is.
Peltola responded that the goal should be zero. There's no reason an in-river salmon fishery should be shut down while the commercial fleet is allowed to continue fishing.
There are strong feelings also that even the term bycatch is an affront to foundational principles of not wasting and making sure that all life is sustainable and able to regenerate itself.
In 2020, Bering Sea trawlers reported bycatch of tens of thousands of Chinook salmon and hundreds of thousands of chum. That's in spite of this year's abysmal salmon returns to the Kuskokwim, Yaneliquit, and Upper Yukon rivers, which have already triggered one of the council's bycatch reduction measures. But even under those rules, the trawl fleet is allowed to catch up to 45,000 kings. And the Bering Sea isn't the only place where bycatch is a problem. In the Gulf of Alaska, some salmon fishermen complain about rules that allow bycatch allocations to be moved around. If pollock trawlers in one area catch 1,300 fewer king salmon, for example, that 1,300 salmon allowance can be transferred to another fishery. Kodiak-based commercial salmon fisherman Alexis Kwachka is among the dozens who recently called on Governor Mike Dunleavy and the North Pacific Council to tighten the rules.
The trawl fleet has done a mighty job of trying to mitigate their interaction with king salmon, but the bottom line is they still use a bunch of them. And, you know, as these programs have developed, we've allowed for one fishery to roll fish into the next fishery.
In other words, this share trading type system for Chinook salmon bycatch.
And I think that it's time to revisit that and see if that's really, you know, if we're talking about saving king salmon, then the net result should be savings.
Kwatchka says he believes that weighing commercial interests like the billion-dollar pollock industry against rural subsistence traditions is a false equivalence.
The tax that the state receives is minor compared to the cost that's being incurred by the residents of the state as far as way of life, whether you're talking about halibut or crab or salmon.
The Alaska Whitefish Trawlers Association, an industry group representing independent catcher vessels in the Gulf of Alaska, says its business model depends on its ability to shift bycatch limits around.
If trawling shuts down, then life as I know it is over.
That's Kodiak-based trawler Paddy O'Donnell.
I can't pay my mortgage, I can't keep my boat running. That's the impact it's going to have on me and a lot of other families that are in the same situation that I'm in. I don't have other fisheries to go to. I trawl, I don't salmon fish, I don't do any other fisheries.
O'Donnell says the fleet has spent years working to improve technology and methods to reduce salmon bycatch.
The trawl sector has gone a long way in gear development, gear modifications, electronics and what have you over the years to try and decrease the amount of incidental take we have when it comes to salmon. We're continuing to work on that. We'll continue to work on that.
Bycatch isn't limited to salmon. Crab fishermen are also calling for serious reductions in bycatch of juvenile crab in trawl nets. But that's another debate for another time. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Recently, fisheries biologist Birch Foster was kind enough to sit down on the phone with me. I had one question. Why do some salmon runs and species seem to do very well right alongside other species and runs that struggle when they seem to have the same ocean conditions?
The different species of salmon have different life cycles, number one, and they're going to be spawning in different habitats within a system, the different species, and they also feed on different organisms, different prey out in the ocean. So for instance, let's say at the beginning of, say, a pink salmon life cycle, that life cycle is only 2 years, and the pinks are going to come in and spawn, usually in the lower areas of watersheds. They will spawn in maybe shallower water than other species. The eggs are deposited in the gravel, and then they have to go through the winter. Different parts of the region will have an input of very different climate variables on it, like snow and freezing and precipitation. And so something on the south end of Kodiak might be very different than what you find in a fog neck. So number one, you have different climate inputs on the different species. But then in the spring, once, these different species emerge, they have different life cycles that, the sockeye are going to spend 1 to 2 years in a freshwater system like a lake. The pinks and chum are going to go straight out to the ocean. And so based on your conditions in the freshwater and your conditions in the estuary, nearshore waters, they're going to enter into different feeding regimes based on the water temperature and the amount of food. You're going to have incredibly variable survival of different species. That's why you get in 1 year, maybe a really, really big sockeye run that might be 4 or 5 or 6 year old fish, but then you might have a really small pink run that's only a 2 year cycle. But the other thing is, once the species head out into the ocean, they're going to be feeding on different organisms. The sockeye have different sized gill breakers, and they they're going to be looking for a smaller size of prey. That's what their optimal prey is. It's more like zooplankton. It's smaller microorganisms. While a chum or a pink, they can feed on small fish, but they can also feed on plankton. So pink and chum can access more variety of food sources. But coho and king, they're not going to be targeting the small microorganisms. They're going to be going for usually fish, depending on how big they are and what stage in their life they are. And then there's all the other predators out there in the ocean that dominate the Gulf of Alaska, you know, like pollock and cod and arrowtooth and lampfish and sand lance. I mean, there's so many other fish out there that until a salmon gets bigger, you will be prey to that, you know, even though as salmon get bigger, they would start eating things like sand lance or herring. But all those different variables together end up in having microclimates of success and failures and mediocrity. And, you know, and this year there was a pretty good harvest of sockeye. But like for chum and coho, they were probably below average. It's complicated.
That is very interesting, though. So are red salmon pretty closely tied to how well zooplankton do in the ocean? And if they can't get that food source, are they able to move along to another food source, or are they just sort of liable to have a bad year?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, once they leave their natal stream and head out in the ocean, sockeye in this area, they tend to head west. You know, they're going to head west out toward the Aleutians and out toward areas that we really don't study a lot. And because their major food source would be microorganisms and zooplankton, you know, they're going to be trying to migrate in areas that have plentiful food resource. And I imagine as you got these large schools migrating, they will be trying to key in on water temperatures and water depths that have their preferred food source. They can run into large amounts of food, or they could also run into large amounts of competition, which is the other thing. The more competition out there, the less food resource there will be for whatever fish are in the area. But then the areas that they're migrating are we're talking so vast, you know, we don't know exactly where each one of these fish goes. We know they head a certain direction. We know they come back in a certain area. But there's a lot of mysteries involved right there.
What would you say from what you said about the different species of salmon, that pink salmon and chum salmon, for instance, are less susceptible to having a bad food year because they're more generalists?
Pink salmon are probably the most generalist, and they're the most recently evolved salmon. So they're particularly suited to being able to access probably a larger variety of food sources, depending on their size and the stage of their life history. Even though chum might be able to access lots of different food sources, they also spend a longer time in the ocean. The pinks are going to spend one winter in the ocean, so really short life cycle. Chums will spend three or four, and what they encounter out in the Gulf of Alaska over to the Bering Sea and North Pacific is, you know, it's kind of unknown. But they definitely have a different diet than, say, a sockeye or definitely like, you know, a king and a coho.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.